Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for the next couple of hours talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, you can. Sitting to my right, flying my wingman today, is Nate from Strictly Diesel. Did you drive your gas car here?
No, I did not.
What'd you bring?
No, my F-350, 96 power stroke.
You have an F?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Don't you make a lot of money on the F-trucks?
Not at all. Okay. More Dodges and Chevys than anything.
You know what is unusual is Alan was telling me the other day that a customer of his said that they sold their Expedition with a 7.3.
Excursion. Yeah.
For like 20, and he says, and then the guy sold it for like 80 or 90 or something like that. It was a huge amount of money.
Wow.
That there was a transition. I think that one, that's the Suburban with a big, nice motor.
Yes.
And the 7.3s, which is generation one of the Ford diesels.
6.9, but yeah, 7.3.
We're going to forget the 6.9. We're going to start with a success, okay?
True.
As with all of us, we start with the success.
Yeah.
Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a question. This is going to be a gas and a diesel show. I'll handle the gas stuff. Nate will handle the diesel stuff. And if you're trying to decide what which platform you have three.
Yeah.
You got Dodge, Ford, and Chevrolet, General Motors.
Nissan.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be pulling a four-horse trailer, though, right?
I've seen it.
Okay, I know. Yeah. Whether it's legal or not might be a different story.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, if you're interested in any of those diesels, and I'll have you educate me about the Nissan.
Sure.
602-508-0960 or any other kind of car question. We don't have to be diesel if we can be any kind of car question. And we're especially good if you and your wife are having an argument with respect to weighing in on what the right answer is. Okay, the noise in the background means we already have a caller. And, Gil, who might that be?
That would be Henry.
Henry, good morning.
Okay, I'm going to make my voice nice and deep because last week you thought you were talking to my wife when you were talking to me.
You have my apologies then, and so you don't get them twice.
Well, that's all right. I'm saving up for that operation anyway. So first question, gentlemen. Are you of the belief that a transmission never needs to be serviced if a company says that it never needs to be filled or anything?
Not of that belief. With the exception maybe of the cars.
Yeah. Yeah, let's divide that question up to a sport utility vehicle and then the mother car, the mom with kids cars, that kind of stuff, and then let's move it up to 3/4 and north of that in other vehicles. So the cars, I agree. There's a lot of them out there that are going to be fine, but they're not burning up their transmissions. They're not hauling big trailers up Rye Hill into the Tonneau forest area.
Yep.
We have lots of that horse trailers hauling bobcats and farm equipment, but cars, yeah. So let me change the question, Henry. Nate, when do you change the transmission fluid on your trucks?
So I have a 2004 Range Rover that I just acquired with 139,000. I don't know the history of the change of the oil, so that's why I was asked.
What does the manual
never
say?
Change.
Okay, what does the manual say?
It says it doesn't need to be serviced. It's lifetime.
Both of us don't like that idea. So if it's lifetime, then what? If your wife had that, what would you be changing her fluid at?
100,000.
And I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
At 100,000 miles, it's been four times around the equator. And so I'm suggesting that the average of all those people that drive that car may be lower or higher. But from a comfort zone, plus a cost zone, what's it going to cost to a sealed transmission? What's it going to cost, or what's your most expensive transmission service?
Depends on the model, but $400 to $500.
Okay, and you're exactly right. It can be even higher than that, depending on the filter and the fluid, because you get fluid that's $5 a quart, and you get fluid that's $25 a quart. So there's kind of
service it for that, or replace it for $5,000 to $7,000,
or more. So you have two choices.
Yeah.
What does your wife say, by the way, Henry?
She is not allowed to look at it, let alone drive it.
Oh, so this is yours and not hers.
Right. I will let her use it to pick up furniture, but I have to be in the proximity of the vehicle at all times to make sure that she's not accidentally stopping in neutral and hitting it with her hand and going into low gear and overheating the transmission.
Is she?
My next question.
Wait a minute.
Is
I have a question. Hold on. Yes. Is she standing there next to you?
Oh, hell no. She's about 20 miles south of where I am right now.
Okay, because I was going to talk to her about give her the name of a good divorce attorney, but go ahead. You have a second question.
So my second one, this may be helpful for you, too, so retain that name.
Okay.
If you weren't sitting next to your lovely wife right now, which woman in the annals of history would you love to take a top-down ride through Pacific Coast Highway with?
Of all the women?
Diesel guy, too.
Well, first of all, okay, Renee's not sitting next to me, and even if she was, are you thinking the answer is going to be like a Marilyn Monroe or something like that? Are you thinking that that kind of is a square box?
I think it might be anyone. It could be Catherine the Great. It could be ISIS. Anybody.
Okay, let me turn the question around to you just so we can get to the chapter of this book. Now, with respect to the parameters, who would you want to drive down the Pacific Highway?
Okay. Are you familiar with the Fifth Dimension?
Yes.
The group?
Yes.
Okay, you know the lead singer, the female?
Yes.
Marilyn McCoo?
Yeah, okay. The name is familiar, and she's very pretty.
Even at this point in time, she could be 1 foot in the grave. And she's my ride partner.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good thing your wife is 30 miles away from you because...
Oh, she's fine with it. She'd arrange it. You know what? I'd have her drive while we sat in the back seat.
You know that? Yeah, I love your wife more than I do you. I mean, she's a sturdy lady.
We are going
the wrong direction
here, boy.
Nate and I, if our wives were here, they'd have their pistols out pointed at our heads saying, you better come up with the right answer on this one.
It's always easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Oh, well, that's true. But to answer your question, my wife and I have been down the Pacific Coast Highway, both in a motorhome and in a pickup truck and in a sports car. And I would rather have her there because she's likely to be used to my driving, so she's going to scream less than some new broad that's going to be in the passenger side seat. You know what I'm saying? I think the ride will be more enjoyable with somebody that's been there with me before.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Henry, God bless you, buddy. Lifetime transmission, we're saying 100K. We say do it now and then do it again at 250 or something like that. Just stretch them out at 100K. That's what we do. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. So we're not going to do the show before the show, so we didn't talk about this. But let's go through the different platforms. Okay, we're going to start with the first one, which I think was Ford, with the 7.3. We're talking big motors.
Sure.
So start from the beginning. Was the 7.3 a success at the very upfront? Was it improved over years, and it's now what it is now? And tell me, give me a timeline.
7.3, so whether you're talking IDI or Powerstroke, I think the fun time started with Powerstroke, so that's 94.5. That motor went from 94.5 to 03.
Okay.
Huge, in my mind, huge improvements with that motor over that time frame. Obviously, we had a body change at that point, too, in 99. Very, very good motor that you could manipulate and still have fun with and be reliable on down the road.
And you're talking about the Powerstroke, the 6-liter or the 7.3?
7.3.
Okay.
7.3.
So... It really is. Would it be fair to say that really is one of the best and biggest and strongest diesel motors that's been available?
That Ford ever had, in my mind, yes.
And what has the Cummins got, a Dodge got, that, I mean, it doesn't have the big cylinders that look like the upper thigh of a football player.
Well, in that time frame, they had the 24 valve, they had the 12 valve before it. All starting to gain popularity, and still to this day, very reliable, very good trucks.
And so I agree. The 5.9 and the 7.3 were great starters.
Yes,
they didn't let us down.
No, nope.
We don't work on them a lot. They still contain a lot of value, no matter how old they are, how many miles they are. So, the Ford went from the 7.3 to the 6-liter.
Yes.
So
things kind of went downhill with the 6-liter.
Downhill, you say that?
I think
the airplane came out of 80,000 feet and hit the ground. That's what I think.
Now, overall, today it is a good powertrain. Today, when it first came out, there were some issues there for sure.
There's been issues until 2 years ago.
But it's a shame that the aftermarket had to re-support that powertrain to make it reliable.
And what?
But good for all of us at the same time.
You're right. The aftermarket came up with fixes that were later adopted by Mr. Ford.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But at the very beginning, what was the first 3 or 4 years of the Ford 6-liter? Do you remember?
Well, I was at the dealer when they came out at the time. So, yeah, there were updates with the programming. There were changes in well, honestly, the programming was the biggest thing. The updates that Ford had on that were huge. And you could see the succession with each program you put on a truck. The truck would act differently every time you programmed it, and you knew Ford was starting to figure it out. It was the strangest thing.
And that's called the dance.
Yeah.
We're going to go in this direction. Oh, it didn't work there. We need to go in this direction. So each one of the updates is kind of, if it looked like a road map, it would be Phoenix in the middle, and we'd have all these spider roads leading out of Phoenix.
Sure.
And the 6-liter, what I remember is a friend of mine was in charge of a fleet, and he bought a bunch of 6-liters, and they had a water problem. Water coming out of the heads, water in the cylinders, all kinds of stuff. They were doing head stunts and head gaskets and all this kind of stuff. They never did fix it until later.
Right.
And what was the water issue?
Most likely EGR cooler.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what we were told, and that's what we found out. So they were doing a lot of this. Well, the normal stuff is head gaskets. The normal stuff is broken heads. The normal stuff's a lot of things. But the EGR cooler's in the cooling system, or is provided heat dissipation by the coolant.
Cooling system's huge on that motor for sure. Yeah.
So that was something that took them a whole long time to fix, to find and fix, until you took your 6-liter in, and that's what they did.
Right.
It was a guaranteed fix.
Right.
There was a whole lot of vehicles that were fixed 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 times.
Unfortunately, yes.
But Chevrolet and some of the other ones have had the same problem.
Oh, yeah.
They all have
their issues.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So 602-508-0960, if you have a diesel, or if you have a question about a diesel, or if you're thinking about a diesel, then between the two of us, we should be able to give you some guidance. And we're not going to be in lockstep with one another, because no shop owners, no diesel guys ever are.
We have our disagreements, so that's okay.
Yeah, and Nate hit his head a couple years ago, and he hasn't really recovered, but he'll do the best he can to give you the best advice he can. But if you could see Nate next to me, I want you to think of a 6-year-old boy and a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And that's the difference between our physiques is exactly that. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you about a really good shop. And there's quite a few in town, but they're friends of mine, and I know they're good, and I vetted them for you. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa, the only shop in Mesa. He's the only one I recommend in Mesa. Been around since 1970, but Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair, come from two families that were fixing cars and pumping gas in the late 50s, early 60s. They've been around a long time. Both of these kids knew early what the smell of gasoline and what a garage looked like. So they have AOC certified technicians. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Like I said, they've been around a long time, and unfortunately I'd like to find another one, but nobody else in Mesa has been able to pass the grade. Let's go to the phones. Philip, you're up first. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Love your show. Out driving errands. I just had to weigh in on up the PCH road with somebody in the car. It would be Rich Davis. A friend of mine from the 90s, he used to call me. I lived in Ventura, California. He'd call me. We'd go up the Rincon Coast in a 63 Cadillac convertible with twin fins, longboards sticking out the back. We had a lot of fun. And if he were here today, it'd mean I'd still be surfing.
You know,
I love your show, guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody has those. As we get older, we have those kinds of things that when we were younger, we didn't have a care in the world, and we could do whatever we wanted to do. For me, it was drag racing on Central. That's where you kind of wanted to be.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where you aspired to be. And those are happy times. Now, I'm going to admit, I never ran from the cops, and there was a lot of them that did, and half of them got away. but by the same token, it was just what we did in from 68 to 75. So what we did is go to Central Avenue. A lot of times you just park and watch the guys.
Yeah.
But I wasn't stupid enough to do a giant burnout and then run a 10-second quarter mile. You know, of course, I didn't have the car to do that either.
Right.
But it just was what it was. But driving Ventura like that would be the same, and surfing.
Yeah.
Bob, you're up next. How can we help you?
Morning, guys. You know, on the automatic transmission, you know, like with a GMC Sierra pickup, is there a fluid that you guys would use, like, say, money's no object, or would you just go, like, with the regular Dextron, like the factory fluid?
What do you think, Nate?
That's a great question. Mobil 1 has some great synthetics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is your car call for a synthetic fluid?
No, just the standard. Well, the Dextron 6, I don't know. Is that in the jug? Is that like a synthetic fluid now, that like in a 2014 GMC Sierra?
Yeah.
I believe it is.
And I do, too. Yeah. I think it's here's the difference. And conventional transmission has a window. And I want you to pretend, as you move your hands on a ruler, it's from 1 to 6. A synthetic opens that protection window up to a 1 through 10. So it handles heat better, and it's thinner in cold weather. It'll last longer. It has a wider range of temperatures it can handle. So the answer is there's lots of conversions for your Dextron 6. And Nate likes Mobil, and I would say if you had anything with a name brand on it like Chevron or Quaker State or some of the other oil companies, I think you'd be safe.
We deal with a smaller chemical/oil company also, BG.
Okay.
Has a great synthetic transmission fluid too that lasts forever. So,
and yeah. BG is not something you're going to buy at the auto parts store.
No. No, you have to come see me.
Exactly. And it's kind of, it's like Avon, so to speak,
sure.
Where you have to buy it from the vendor.
Sure.
And so, BG is a well-known chemical company and oil company.
Yep.
So that's it, Bob. We thank you. And you know what? Would it be fair, Nate, to just say shop price?
If you're worried about price, but I think he said if you weren't worried about it, what would you go with?
Yeah.
You know. BG is up there, but it's worth every penny.
And like you said, Mobil 1 and Chevron and a lot of the big oil companies that actually produce their own oil and produce their own base stock and stuff like that would be good. So,
yeah.
You know, Dextron is made by somebody else, I promise you that. There's no such thing as a Dextron factory. They're buying it from somebody and put it in the Dextron can. So that's what I would do. Okay?
Good question.
Thanks.
All right, you bet. We get that a lot. Oh, we got another caller. We'll do that. Who's that, Gil?
That would be Dan.
Dan, good morning.
Yeah, Mark, my question is about those diesel engines, those 7s and the 6.7. If these engines were so good, why did the manufacturers eliminate them with the junk? I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
Okay, wait a minute. I have a question now. Why the manufacturers did what?
Why did they eliminate those bigger engines that were working so well and go to a junky diesel, or when it wasn't performing like it should?
Okay, I think we can answer that. Go.
It's a big picture, unfortunately, and a lot of it has to do with our government. The emission standards changed. The 7.3 couldn't keep up with that emission standard, so they had to go to an EGR motor, which was the 6-liter. And then as the 6-liter progressed, emission standards changed again, then they went to the 6.4, which had a DPF on it and EGR. And emission standards are still getting more stringent, so now we have the 6.7 with DPF. Scrubbing with the DEF, you know.
DPF, explain it.
Yeah, SCR, DPD.
Give me the acronyms. Tell me what the acronyms mean for people that don't understand.
Diesel emissions fluid.
Okay.
That gets sprayed into the exhaust to keep NOx down.
Create a big fire. It's like spraying gasoline on a fire.
Well, trying not to have the fire, so because the NOx is from the excessive heat, so... Yeah.
For a visual, we got, we're just trying to enhance the ability of the exhaust system to consume the soot and everything else, and NOx.
So basically back to the question, anytime you see a motor change or something change with the motor, it's because the manufacturers are trying to keep up with the emission standards that Washington gives us.
Okay. So let me take the other side of that. We all agree the 7.3 was a good motor.
Oh yeah.
But is it as good as the today 6.7 in the Dodge?
You'd struggle to get the horsepower and torque number out of 7.3. You got to do quite a bit to it to get that number out of what today's 6.7.
Let's
Dodge,
talk about
6.7 Ford.
Okay.
Yeah. There's still stock numbers of today's power plants. That 7.3 would struggle to get there. Now, granted, I know there's guys out there probably flame me, whatever, for saying that, but you do have to do quite a bit to a 7.3 to get it to that
6.7 level.
6.7 level. Yes.
And the 6.7 is right now. That's the best we've got. And no, with the exception of the 7.3, because they want the cubic inches or whatever, the idea is that the 6.7, both on the Ford and the Chrysler side, it's really the best diesel that they've ever, either one of them has produced.
I think so.
Emissions, power, performance, fuel economy. They got all that down.
They got it all down.
And it's no different than those old cars of the old days that if you locked yourself in the garage, you'd die in 5 minutes. from what came out of the tailpipe.
Right.
Today, with the cars that we have today, you're going to die of starvation before you die of asphyxiation.
Right.
You're going to be in there for a week.
Right. The tailpipe's clean for a reason.
Yeah. So, yeah. Wrap your lips around it. I'm being facetious.
Yeah, don't do that.
But, yeah. But the idea is that they're clean. So it's not really a matter of they took something that was really great and took it off the market. With the exception of the numbers on the engine, the 7.3, the 6.0, the 6.4, the 6.7, with the exception of taking all that out, we have made definite progress.
Absolutely.
And so you and I both drive Dodges. We both have 6.7s. You have a twin turbo and I have a single.
1 minute.
I had one, yes.
Oh, would you get rid of it?
I got rid of it.
Yeah. The one you brought out here to the parking lot?
That's, yeah.
Okay.
That's,
all right, it's gone.
It's gone.
Okay, but what my point is both of us are driving Dodges. We could drive Fords. We could drive Chevrolets.
Sure.
But when we start talking about the Chevrolet, when we get back, there's one component of that Chevrolet diesel that's better than anybody else's. And so when we get back, don't say it. And don't say it. It's not the GM flag on this side of the fender either. And it's not the GM on the tailgate. But when we come back, we'll talk about that. But I think the gist of what our message is we're making tremendous progress. And what drives it a lot of times is what's coming out of the tailpipe.
Yeah.
And there has to be changes in order to get within the parameters.
Yes.
But to say that the 7.3 was something that would replace the 6.7 and you'd be better off with the 7.3 today, that's not true.
That's not true.
There's nothing about that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Nate from Strictly Diesel and Mark Salem. Minute to push all the stupid buttons. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Nate from Strictly Diesel up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. We've been friends for many, many years. We share the same love of diesels. We do a lot more gas. I don't think you guys do lots of gas, right?
No, not a lot.
And Alan's business on the diesel side is probably a 20%, 25% of everything underneath the ceiling. But his is happy money. And that's a big difference. That's happy money.
Right.
They come in and you give them the menu and they just check all kinds of stuff off. And then you question them about it. And it's kind of like, I'm going to talk you out of this because the only thing you've got is a friend of a friend of a friend said the guy in Kentucky said this is really great stuff.
Right.
And so I need to talk you out of that because it's nothing I've heard of, nothing I've tried before. And I really kind of want to avoid doing a research and development on your truck with a scanner I've never done before.
Yeah.
Or a programmer, I should say. So when we talk about good car repair shops, we have to talk about the only transmission shop in Phoenix that I can recommend you to, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been around since Jesus was a baby. Phil knows transmissions from the Power Glides of the 60s and 70s all the way up to the new computerized 8-speed electronics. So he has the fundamental knowledge, and that's the real beauty of the whole thing is the fundamental knowledge. We still need to make things happen. We used to do it with pressure. We used to do it with the throttle cable, and now we do with electronics and solenoids. So it's a matter of just redirecting pressurized fluid to give you first, second, third, and six and seven, eight gears. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road. Okay, my question to you was with respect to the diesels.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's got the best transmission?
That's a matter of opinion.
Okay. Well, I'm asking you yours.
Well, you're going to say Allison.
I am.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But the 5R on the Ford, I think, is very good. The E40D 4100 platform is now very good.
Talk in speeds and stuff because they're not going to understand all the acronyms. E40D
is a 4-speed. Okay. 4100, 4-speed. 5R is a 5-speed. Behind the 6.0 and 6.4, that was a good trans. 6R140 now behind the 6.7 Ford. Is a 6-speed. Now they're into the 10-speed with 2020, but the 6R overall very good. Each manufacturer has their own
focus,
their
own direction.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is that we've seen transmissions come out that were the best thing that ever happened since sliced bread, and they turned out to be miserable, miserable failures. I prefer to hang my hat on something that's been out there 6 or 8 years, and maybe an improvement of that one.
Right.
But when you get to the Allison, let me state their case. When was the last time you saw a bad one?
I overhauled one a couple months ago.
Okay, well, how many do you do a year?
Not very many, but yeah.
And was it wear and tear, or was it abuse?
I'm going to say abuse.
Okay. All right. That, see, we have to draw that line.
You have to draw the line, yeah, just because the tuner was a little heavy, but, you know. Yeah.
So the tuner is a handheld device that we're going to change the parameters in the to the engine.
Right.
We're going to get in and we're going to lie about what's going on. So when your throttle is at 3/4, we're going to lie to the computer and say that your throttle is wide open, so the computer's going to turn on the injectors instead of it's going to turn on a fire hose.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's what tuners and programmers do, is they just change the parameters and lie to the computer so the computer does something we want it to do.
Right? 2 minutes.
And it has to do with timing, fuel pressure, turbo boost. We're talking diesels.
Yep. Some modified transshift points.
Exactly.
Yep.
And injector flow, injector duration,
flow. Yep. Duration,
how long are they open. So in a normal atmosphere, in a normal without a programmer, the injector, at the same conditions might sound like this. But if you put a programmer, it sounds like this in an exaggerated way.
Yeah. Pretty much.
It's kind of, in an exaggerated way.
Yeah.
And so, and is, I see lots of Dodges that dump lots of black smoke. Have they just got, what part of their programmer have they got misidentified or they've got misadjusted?
Unfortunately, all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Just to be simple, all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you still enjoy the enhancement of power and performance without the black smoke, or
yes.
Do they go hand in hand?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay.
You can definitely have power without black smoke.
Okay.
So.
All right. The black smoke is simply we're not consuming that fuel.
Correct.
Okay. So we're flooding the engine, and a gasoline motor would be the same thing. It would
correct.
Be a whole bunch of black smoke coming out of the tailpipe.
Yep.
Okay. Larry, you're up first. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
This is it's kind of an electrical question. I have a 2005 Toyota Sequoia. And the AC unit works fine in the car. All the controls in the front of the car work fine. But there's a back set of controls on the console. And they all went out at the same time. And, you know, I check fuses first, but I can't seem to see any fuse that's bad. Could there be a relay somewhere for that?
There could be a whole lot of things. If you have a schematic, you're going to go to that back panel, and the first thing you're going to look for is power and ground. And if you take the back panel out and you can get a wiring diagram, you run a risk of smoking the whole unit, but it's entirely possible, and depend on experience and success, so we can artificially inseminate power and ground and get the controller to light up. So what I hear you saying is it's completely dead. It's not doing anything.
It's not doing anything.
Okay. This is kind of one of those things, Nate, that we run into a lot. It's, we can't bid the repair because we don't know what it is yet. But many, many times, and I'm going to use stupid numbers just to make sure that everybody understands, it can be $50 to $250 to find it and a buck to fix it.
Yep.
Okay.
And now that's no guarantee, obviously.
Right.
But a good shop, correct me if I'm wrong, a good shop's going to, first they're going to just pull a schematic on that. And go look and see if we have power and ground and see where we get the power and ground from. Maybe we have a switch up front that gives you rear air that doesn't fire up that panel. So if we go around that switch and we fire it up and everything works good, then we know we have to go forward and deal with that switch up front. So if you're good enough, then just get on the internet and find the wiring schematic for the rear AC panel.
Okay.
And just follow. How many wires can there possibly be? Five, six?
Five or six, I would think. Yeah.
Power ground and fan speed.
Fan speed, yeah.
Because the compressor is going to be controlled by the front. So there can't be a whole lot of things. Now, when you say it doesn't work, will it light up or anything?
No, it doesn't light up. Nothing.
Okay. And so you're at nighttime, you can take your dimmer switch and you can go bright and dim, and it doesn't affect the switch in the back.
Correct. Yes.
Is there a switch in the back that gives you rear air? Or is there a switch in the front that turns on your rear?
Well, the switch in the front will give you rear, and it's working. I mean, I get air conditioning in the rear. I just don't get any of those controls working.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So we know the fan motor's working. We know that they're opening up the flow of Freon. So he's got cold air and he's got fan. He just can't control it from the back.
Right.
So we're not losing the telephone line to the air conditioning system. We're just losing it from the panel that's sitting in the back between to handle the people in the back seat.
And for that matter, does your front switch say rear on it? Do you have to put the switch to say rear at all?
Yes, it says front only or rear only.
Okay.
It says rear only, and both of those work. I mean, when I hit them, I can shut off the rear, I can turn it back on from the front. But
okay.
the consoles, none of them work. They just don't.
Okay, but why would he have front and rear? Don't you have both?
Yes. I mean, I can get both, yes.
Okay,
but
so...
The controls in the back control, if you want, it controls temperature and fan speed, and I think that's it. Or and on and off.
Okay, the on and off has to be the blower. And, hey, Gil, did I just blow by a break?
Yeah, but you could take it any time.
Okay. Nate and I are going to think about this, so, Larry, would you just hang on? And we're going to take a break,
sure.
And we'll be right back. Forty-five minutes after the hour, and we're going to go back real quick and pick up with Tony where we left off.
Larry.
I'm sorry, Larry. Tony, you stay right there. I'm still kind of confused about the air conditioning controls. Are you just going to? Do you have up front? You just have back and front, and you don't have both.
In the front panel, I have two buttons. One is for the rear fan, separate, and one says front and rear, which is the control button for both sets.
Okay.
And then I have a whole set of controls behind the console for the rear passenger.
Okay.
They do not work at all. My air conditioning works fine, and I can get air from the fan blowing air conditioning in the back vents. But none of the panel works in the back. I mean, my fan adjustment there, my temperature control, none of that works.
Okay. All right. It just has to be some kind of a power or ground or there's a broken connection.
Yeah.
Larry, do you live in a desert area? At all, by chance?
Yes.
Just throwing it out there, I have seen rat damage or mouse damage that could be hidden and cause the same exact problem. So I don't know if you have issue with that at all ever. But
I never have, but it could be. You're right.
Going back to wiring diagram, the first thing I do is check power and ground at that switch box or that controller, and then at that point proceed to, can I ohm it out? Is it grounded elsewhere? Is it, you know?
Yeah, and you'd do a good visual, and you'd know which harness it was in, and you'd follow it, but sometimes you can't find it, and so you just run a new wire and be done with it. Now, let me tell you how to get the rats and the gophers and stuff out of your car. You get an old mattress that you can find in anywhere in the desert you want, and you strip all the cloth off of it, so we're just a metal frame.
Yep.
And then you put some kind of a conductive material around the end. You plug in a 110 to it. And as soon as those little boogers try to crawl in here, then when you walk out in the morning and three or four of them are fried, you go, bingo. And hopefully the rest of their friends will smell them burning and they won't come around. But I don't know how you're going to keep them out because that's a problem I'm faced with my personally up at the ranch and a lot of other people. Yep. And I just don't know how the easy thing is.
Right.
I can get... Yeah. them to stop chewing on exposed wires in my irrigation system because I'll use red hot pepper powder. So I'll take a spray bottle and I'll spray the wire in the harness and then I'll sprinkle that on there. Obviously when it rains I got to go back and do it again.
Yeah.
But that really hot pepper stuff is what I and you know my wife seems to think it's okay to tell the grandkids to go over and lick that wire. And it just doesn't work for me. Larry, thank you very much. Hey, and Larry, do me a favor. When you fix it or get it fixed, just let me know.
I will. Okay. I've emailed you before. You're very responsive.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Tony, you're up.
All right. Hey there, Mark.
Hey.
Yeah, cayenne pepper, it's the best. Keeps all the rats away.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Hey, have a 1997 Ford Explorer. With a 4.0 liter single red cam, four-wheel drive, track control. Only problems I've had with it a while back is when the top of the radiator blew out because it's plastic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, it just goes out, especially in Arizona. Had Blackwell refit it. No problems after that whatsoever. Right now, I get out there on the freeway when I can, maybe once a month, and I run this. This motor has got a lot of top end on it. I'll run it up to 100 miles an hour for a mile, let it go down slow, and then everything runs fine. It's coming up on 160,000 miles, and I'm just asking, what are the things I need to check on the drivetrain?
I think you're wasting your money. I think you should just look for symptoms. In an oil change, we're going to be looking at the drivetrain. We're going to be looking at the suspension and all that kind of stuff. And a real seasoned guy is going to see bushings that are bad, and it's going to see ball joint wear on the tires. You don't have to know that the ball joint's bad. You just know it is because the tire wear tells you. But as far as drivetrain, engine, transmission, and differential, first of all, I think the differential is the least of his worries, right?
I would say so.
And the transmission, I think it depends on who drives it and how much you pull on it and stuff, but I think my comfort zone is 150,000 miles, 25 up and down. I think you're going to replace that thing. I don't think it has enough clutch material to go much past where it's at right now. Nate?
Other visuals you could look at are U-joints, CV joints, if it has it. I don't think on that model it had CVs yet, but,
He could pull the pan, and if there's half the O-rings in there and snap rings and clutch material in there, then that would be close. The engine, in my opinion, if you overheat it, then it's going to go toast. But the engine is oil consumption is the beginning of most all bad things.
Sure.
And so you're either going to leak oil, you're going to start drinking oil, and that's usually the beginning of the end.
Transfer case, has that been serviced, looked at?
Yeah, but even then, isn't that kind of like a diff, with the exception of maybe a bushing in the tail shaft and maybe a seal here and there? The transfer case and the diff, I like the idea of changing the fluid. I'm not going to argue that. But as far as expected life, would it be fair to say 150 to 200 virtually good?
In my experience, the transfer case is one of the most forgotten pieces under a four-wheel drive vehicle. So, to have that inspected / serviced is kind of huge in my mind, just for what I see on a daily basis. So,
and so as a result of that, can you see that the drain plugs got grease on it from the 1920s and dirt on it? And then that transfer case has come in and it's just not working, and it's not. Then you could put one and one as two.
Right.
How many times have you ever seen a transfer case go bad that had really nice fluid in it but wasn't brand new?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
No.
So, Tony, that's kind of the answer is no one can really tell you, because if we could, that would be great. But the bottom line is it has to do with symptoms and inspections. So you start puking oil out of the differential on the axle seals or the pinion seal, you start howling on the rear end, you're towards the end. The transfer case is usually going to have a whine, it's going to have a clunk, it's going to have something, it can start leaking oil like crazy. But until it starts consuming oil, or you damage the motor by overheating or abusing it, then you've still got a lot of life. We did a query not too long ago. You can't imagine how many cars we have in our fleet that are 300,000 and 400,000 and 500,000 miles.
Same here.
And it's a matter of pride, especially when the customer, you go in and you look at their fleet of cars that you've serviced, and they've got three pages.
Yep.
So there's a relationship there. But
sure,
some people have a false sense of security when they decide to over-maintain their car. I'm going to change the oil 2,000 miles because it'll love me more. I'm going to change the differential fluid, all my fluids in my drivetrain, front, transfer case, transmission, differential, every year because it'll love me more. Do you subscribe to that?
Yes, but no. That gets the point, too, where you're throwing your money out the door, because let that fluid do its job,
right,
for the full extent of time, for sure. No sense to overdo it in that way.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
When we talk about fluids, though, brake fluid is something that people don't really jump all over.
No.
And there's such an easy way to determine whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
And the ABS system is very, very expensive. So if the brake fluid becomes contaminated, typically you're going to have more than a wheel sensor to put the ABS system back together.
Typically, yeah.
Okay, what else? Yeah. What other fluid? Forget windshield wiper fluid, battery fluid. We don't have much. I mean, who cares about that?
Headlight fluid?
What? Light fluid?
Headlight fluid?
What
do they call that? Blinker fluid.
Blinker fluid.
No.
Yeah.
All joke. Right.
And then
but,
power steering?
Power steering's a forgotten one, definitely.
But in reality, it's pink until it starts howling. It's pink until it starts coming apart, or it's amber, or whatever color it happens to be, depending on the car.
Yeah.
Typically, nobody does anything until it starts howling. And then you look at the fluid and you go, okay, well, what? But the fluid was second.
Right.
The howl was first.
Right.
And so you're looking at the fluid and you're going, oh, well, I could have diagnosed this. No, you couldn't, because the fluid was fine just before this thing started howling.
Exactly.
So those are the kind of fluids. What about yours? Are you on an annual basis on all your fluids, your personal truck, your wife's car, truck?
No, I go by mileage off the sticker.
Okay.
And at that point, I look it over and change accordingly. So,
okay. How often are you right on top of the owner's manual?
Never.
Okay, are you early or late?
I would say I'm early.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I like the 50, 100, 150, 200.
That's not bad.
I just like that. It's just easy to keep a fleet together. When it comes up to 50, you do services. You do it at 100, you're doing a whole lot of fluids. And then hoses and belts. It's like 8 years, 100,000 miles. So at 8 years, I'm nervous. 100,000, they're going.
Right.
And yeah. So it's, but the owner's manual is the Bible of the car, but every time you dig it out of the glove box, it's never been opened.
No, it's never been opened.
It's never been opened.
No, very few.
And if they did, it's because they're trying to figure out how to work the rear air conditioning controls in there.
Or look for a fuse somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of circuits that come out of the PCM that are not fused.
Correct.
They're fused upstream, but they're not downstream.
Right.
So, but how many times checking power and ground on an electrical kind of condition, what percentage of the time does that give you a direction or not?
Well, I'd say half to three quarter.
I would have said the same thing.
Yeah.
And once you find power and ground, either you don't have power and ground and you got to get them there.
Yep.
And we just take some big leads right off the battery that are fused and just plug it in and see if it'll work.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work or if it smokes.
Smokes.
Yeah. And you let the smoke out of it, then you know the panel's bad anyway.
Right. So yeah.
You got to go forward and find out where it's fused, but you already know why the fuse is blown. So those are the kinds of things. You're right. I think the thing that I see a lot that I feel bad for them is the overheats. It's like I was only a mile from home.
Right.
Or I was just trying to get to my appointment, and the car's towed in, and the motor looks like a big piece of burnt toast. And you're talking on the downside, 4,000 and 5,000, and on the north side, 10 to 15.
If it's a diesel, yeah.
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 You're talking big dollars.
Big dollars.
And I was only just a mile from home. I know, but the towing from where you're at home or to your garage would have been really sweet compared to the estimate
exactly.
I'm just about to give you.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
And I think that the overheat is what I see, and I feel bad for them. It's just a really bad decision. When you're driving down the road and everybody's honking at you and your car looks like one big steam ball,
yeah,
and there's steam coming from the cracks of the hood, the steam underneath the car, it really, you have to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what cell phones are for, is pull off the side of the road, turn the hazards on, walk away from the car, call the tow truck company, call your husband, call your wife, whatever. But you got to walk away from the car.
Yep.
Car fires are nothing, right? When's the last time you saw a car fire?
Been a while.
Well, yeah. Diesels don't necessarily self-combust like that.
Did see one on a diesel, but yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, and same for us.
Yeah.
The fuel system is kind of nifty in this respect. If we compromise it with the leak, it usually doesn't have enough fuel pressure to run, so the thing will die.
Right.
And if it dies, then there's a good chance that the fuel will stop flowing. And when it stops flowing, then we don't necessarily have a lot of car fires.
Exactly.
In the old days with quadra jets and the Fords and the Hollies that leaked fuel like, you know, sieves, then that would be something different.
Sure.
602-508-0960, and we're going to be back in a few minutes. Actually, we're going to be back in about 4.5 minutes, so if maybe five. Okay, Gil, maybe five. So if you want to talk about cars, or if you have a question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting here next to me. He has clean fingernails, that's kind of nice, but I know your wife probably scrubbed them before you came to radio.
I clipped them. They are kind of clean.
Oh, okay. Well, at least you don't bite them like I do. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. We're here for another hour, and if you have questions about maintenance, about diesels, about buying a car, selling a car, those are the kinds of things that we can help you with respect to what's the biggest thing you see when this happens. Or we're really good at settling fights between husbands and wives. So if you have one, 602-508-0960. Four minutes after the hour at 11 o'clock, we're going to be here till noon. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. We've known one another for many years. He's on our best car repair shops list. There's a couple of guys in town that do good work on diesels, and Nate is one of the oldest guys.
Oh,
that,
wow.
Well, in years with respect to working on diesels, right?
Sure.
Who else was working on the 6 liters before you in the independent market?
Oh, not very.
Right. I don't remember anybody. I remember you being it.
There may have been two, but yeah.
Are they still in business today?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, maybe one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the second question that has to be answered.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody, there's guys that come and go all the time, but they don't really count in the history of the whole world.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They were there for a couple of years, and then and during the couple of years, they were telling us, all of us gray-haired guys, how to run their business. And then you ask them, you know, well, what kind of profit are you on dealership parts or whatever, and they don't even know the answer. They give you something stupid like, oh, I'm making 60% on all those parts. Okie dokie.
Yeah, yeah.
So those kinds of things. Oh, we already have a caller. Gil, who might that be?
Say hello to Joe.
Joe, good morning. How can we help you today?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2019 Ram with a 6.7 in it, and I had an issue. I went to Page on a Sunday evening pulling a trailer that weighed about 2,000 pounds. When I went down the hill in the Page, I pulled into a service station, and the truck died. I restarted the truck, and it showed a light, service DPFC dealer. So I restarted the truck again, and it was derated. Ended up, could not get a hold of Chrysler service on Sunday night because they're on restricted hours because of COVID. So the truck ended up getting towed to Flagstaff the next day. The dealer called me and said the fuel filter needed to be changed. So I let him change that. That's billable. That did not fix the problem. It turned out that the high-pressure fuel pump had went out and had put metal through the injectors and in the injector lines, so they had to change all that. The truck was down over 30 days waiting on parts, and Ram does not work with Cummins to get Cummins. They had to come from Ram, and the parts were unavailable. So I was without my vehicle over a month. Knowing you guys are, you know, big 6.7 guys, I want you to know that. I also have a question on antifreeze and the light-duty diesels. Do they use the oat or organic antifreeze in any of the pickups?
Nate, you want that one?
Your 2019 should be the oat formula, which
okay,
I know.
So it should be oat?
Yeah, it should be oat. My 17 was oat.
What color is oat?
I think it varies, but it was an orange or red.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And our industry's kind of working out the colors.
Sure.
So we're starting to Ford. Blue was typically, and green was everybody, of course.
Well, Ford's back to green now in the 2020s.
Exactly.
But I think it's also so.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's. I think the best thing to do is either you use a universal, which we do a lot, which is an amber, and it'll say universal, and it'll give you on the backside of it. It'll tell you all the ones that it can replace, and typically that's made by the same guy that made the antifreeze in the Dodge container, the Chevy container, Ford container. With respect to your Dodge, everything you said has happened to other trucks and other cars. I mean, this is a situation that occurs all the time, and it not necessarily has the same, hey, the fuel pump blew up and sent metal throughout the system. But the idea is right now there's lots of cars that are sitting at the dealerships and on shops lots that can't be fixed because the parts aren't in the paint stream. What are you pointing to yourself? Did that happen to you?
Oh, yeah. Our 2018 F-150 diesel.
Yeah,
F-150 is currently in the shop for now just over a month because we can't get an AC compressor.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
And they're just not available.
They're just not available.
And they could be in the pipeline, but there's trucking issues, and there's getting them across the border issues, and then there's all kinds of, what are they doing, what's it called when they have imports and they put all kinds of
tariffs.
Tariffs, yeah. So we have all of that kind of stuff going on. With respect, how many have you seen of the Dodges that have scattered the pump and contaminated
That's the first engine? I've heard of that, especially on the 2019. Now, 2019 went to the CP4 injection pump on those, which never was a huge... People aren't fans of that pump, that particular pump. So being that it scattered...
You've seen that before?
Seen it before, for sure, especially on the Duramax, which was running that pump beforehand. Why Dodge went to that, again, it's emission, more pressures, different injectors, more power, all the above, you know.
Less emissions.
So, I guess my side comment is make sure you use a fuel additive, something with lubricity, to help prevent that in the future. But yeah, not unheard of for that failure.
What would you recommend for fuel additive?
Hotshot Secrets makes a great additive. In fact, they have a video out there claiming how good it is, especially on the CP4s. So I would YouTube that or Google it and look for that. But Hotshot Secrets are, again, a company we deal with, BG, has great products. All the above to help with that failure for sure.
But what the real message here is I've not heard of that. You've not heard of that. and we see lots of Dodges. Last year you saw hundreds, if not a thousand, and we did too. And I've never heard of this happening, so it's not something that anybody be, and I know that you're upset, and I know you, it's out of service for a long time, but I've got a lot of people in that same boat right now, and they're upset, and I would be too. But the pipeline is dry. Right now, the guys have sold all kinds of off-road vehicles, and the pipeline is dry and has been dry for...
Right.
Can you imagine buying a Can-Am for $20,000, $25,000, and you haven't seen it in 3 or 4 or 5, 6 months?
That's crazy.
So it's those kinds of things, but it's just the environment. It's just the environment.
Side comment on the 2019, and this is for all automotive diesels in my mind. The water separation in my mind is not very good. So if you, by chance, got a dirty tank of fuel at some point, doesn't have to be the one that caused it to stall, but... there is a company out there called FASS, F-A-S-S, for fuel pumps, that claim they can basically save what happened to you in that 2019. So if you want to look that up, we install those. Not a dig to our business.
That's,
you could have any. You
could, aftermarket water filter.
It's got aftermarket water separation that would omit your factory ones because obviously they're not working good enough, and at that point save you in the long run. So,
is it after the pump, after the tank, or on the inside of the tank? Is it going into the tank? Is the are we filtering the?
It would be its own pump that is external of the tank,
okay,
and uses different method to get the fuel out.
Does it have a filter as well as a water separator?
It has a filter and water separation, both two filters on the pump itself. So
okay.
Yeah.
So how many filters do you end up with?
Still two.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe
right.
Three if you leave the engine side of the filter in, but you could run just the FASS.
F-A-S-S.
Yes, sir.
Frank Adam Sam Sam. Now I want to talk to you privately. There's lots of stuff out there.
There is lots of stuff
that they Andy Granatelli blessed, and he was involved in it, and Mr. Ford is the one that came up with this, and all these aftermarket stuff. So the fair question is of all of this stuff on the internet and all of these new companies, what percentage are actually bring some sort of value, and what percentage are just taking your money?
Oof. That's a good question.
Just give me some kind of a percentage number. I got one in my head.
A half, maybe.
I was going to go more. I was going to go 60, 40, 70, 30.
Yeah.
I was going to say so much. And we're at the point now where we're not going to install that unless you bring it and pay it. We don't want any responsibility to the success of this product that guarantees you that you're going to get 30 miles to the, and I'm exaggerating, 30 miles to the gallon more than you're getting now.
Well, there's nothing that guarantees fuel economy anymore. And put it this way, in our experience, we won't install something if we've had bad luck with it. So, you know, to that point.
Yeah.
You know.
But the only way you know you had bad luck with it until you've done 5 or 10 of them.
Well, usually it doesn't take that. Believe it or not, it takes one, and that'll be the end of it. But
the measurement of the success of this has to do with the guy with hair behind the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And so we're at his mercy.
True.
So if all of a sudden he's saying, well, this is not doing what I don't have any more horsepower, and I'm going to do it. So all of a sudden it can't be our fault. It has to be his fault.
Right.
Because he asked us to install. It's just
right.
No different than Canon air filters and all the rest of them. You know what I mean? It just has everything to do with, I don't want the responsibility of doing your shopping and standing behind some product that I don't sell, I didn't make a dime on, I'm going to install your part.
Right.
So that, for me, that's one of them things that wads up my underwear. I don't like the idea that I'm charged with the responsibility of installing a part and ultimately in charge with the responsibility of the successful performance of that part. And I've never done any research on it at all. So it's difficult
right.
for us.
Sure.
There's somebody on the phone. Who can that be?
That would be Bill.
Bill, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2000 Isuzu Rodeo, and it's been a good little truck. But I'm having problems with belt squeal when I first fired the truck up in the morning. I have replaced the belt. Didn't seem to help. Then I went and replaced the tensioner, the idler, and the belt again.
2 minutes.
And it really doesn't help. It still squeals. Until the truck gets warm, driving it for 5 or 10 minutes, then the squeal goes away.
In order for us to help you fix that, you have to tell us what you do to make the noise change. So are you turning the steering wheel left and right? Does that affect it? Do you turn on the air conditioning? Does that change the noise? You need to kind of help us figure out. And I think you have a serpentine belt that runs everything.
Yeah, it's one serpentine belt. If I start the truck up in the morning with the air conditioner on, it squeals like crazy. If I start it up with the air conditioner off, it still squeals, but not a lot. The squealing will go away within 20 seconds.
Okay.
If I keep it on, the squealing stays for minutes at a time.
Okay. I like to squeal.
I haven't really tried turning the wheel right and left. To put, like you're saying, to put a load on it with power steering.
Yeah.
I haven't tried that.
Get your garden hose out, and when it starts up, and where are you pointing at me?
No, that's good. Get the hose out. Get a gallon of water.
See how we think together?
Yeah, exactly.
Twin brothers of different mothers. Only difference is you're 9 feet tall and I'm 5'10".
Yeah.
That's the only difference. Your hands are tennis rackets, and mine are little stubby fat guys. You know what I mean? That's the only difference, but we have the same head. There's between the gray matter, our ears, we're the same.
Yeah.
Get a garden hose out there. There is a key here about the air conditioning compressor.
Sure.
There is something here, because when you start it up with the air off, there should not be any operation. We should be spinning a bearing. So then he says there's a change, whether he starts it with the air on or starts it with the air off. How does the air conditioning blow, by the way? Cold?
Yes, it blows cold. And the air conditioner was, the pump was replaced recently. Now, and I had squealing before the pump was replaced and the same squealing after. So,
okay. Trying to use that for the diagnostic process is defective for this reason. We knew the first pump was bad. It easily could be the second pump is bad. We see that. We don't see it a lot, but we've installed bad parts and had to go back and put another part on there. So I just water down the air conditioning pulley, maybe even before you start it, and we're just looking for change. That's what we're looking for. Look at the front nose of the air conditioning compressor. Make sure it's off. When you start it up, then look at the nose of the compressor. It should not be moving.
Right.
And then another thing you do is take a really long screwdriver and touch different things. Be careful, because if you get that into the fan, that thing's going to become a spear, and your radiator and your air conditioning condenser are going to have holes in them and stuff. But just something long that you can feel the vibration, and you can touch the front of the compressor, the back of the compressor. You can touch the power steering pump. You don't want to get tangled up in the belt, but you're just touching stuff to look for that noise, a feel that matches the noise. And last but not least, 5 gallons of gas and a road flare in the back seat. All righty. Thank you very much, Bill. We'll see you later. We're going to take a break. If you'd like to call, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us and you have a car question, 602-508-0960. And Nate and I have enough experience to be able to answer just about anything.
We do pretty good, yeah.
Oh, hold on. Let me turn on your microphone so you can talk. Okay.
Hey, there I am. We do pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, the fundamentals of cars really applies to everything.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't make it. It's spark, fuel. It. What is it? Suck,
squeeze,
squeeze, explode, and then the exhaust.
Yeah.
What is it? Suck. What's the
suck,
what am I
looking squeeze, at? Bang, blow.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Suck, squeeze, bang, blow. That has to do with cars, you nasty son of a guns that are thinking otherwise. The idea is that's a 4-stroke car.
Yep.
But the power steerings work the same. The air conditioning systems work the same. The fuel delivery, the spark, all that stuff works the same.
Yep.
On every car out there, the tires and the brakes, they work the same.
Yep.
You don't have to. The only time you got to be a specialist is every time you get in your Toyota, the horn honks and your seat makes a noise. Okay. You're going to have somebody that typically has done that before.
Yeah.
Or unless they find it on a TSB and then you can fix it.
Right.
All righty. Let me tell you about another great shop in town, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. While I like Bob and Ellen, who own Larry Harker's Auto, is because Bob is a tenacious guy. I sent him a couple of vehicles, and they were big estimates or diagnoses, and he was able to fix them in a completely different direction. He had a BMW, I think it was a BMW, that had water leaking at the passenger side floorboard, and the estimate was like $2,000 or $3,000 for an evaporator.
Wow.
Bob got it and just cleaned the drain line out, and that was it. So the bill was like $75, $80.
Yeah.
And so you and I look up underneath there. We squeeze it a little bit of water comes out. You can hear it sloshing around underneath the dash. I don't know, you either blow in or you blow out. You know, what we're using is weed eaters. We duct tape all the vents, blowers.
Oh, blowers. Yeah.
And then hook it to one vent and blow it real hard.
Wow.
And then if you stick your screwdriver up the drain hole, then if you got pressure in there, even though you might disturb everything, it's going to come out.
Right.
So it's better than trying to push it all up in there and all that yuck that happens to be up there.
Sure.
Sometimes you can unpeel the hose from the evaporator case and clean it up that way.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, Harker's Auto has always been one of my go-to places on that side of town, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Ellen's at the front counter. Bob runs the shop, and trust me, they're good people. Mike, you're up. How can we help you?
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Good.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a comment and a question. I wish I kind of know what I know now back then. I bought a Kia, 06 Kia back 3-4 years ago. I wish I was listening to your show then. I was going to shop for 3 or 4 years, taking my trucks, cars. Well, I bought the Kia with 80,000 miles on it, and the other owner didn't know if the timing belt was done. So I took it into him. I said, just do the timing belt just to be safe. Well, the car's got 160 on it now. We're doing the timing belt again, and my son's a good shape cheap mechanic, so he started tearing into it. He took the timing cover off, and we noticed that belt looks like it's new. I mean, the old original belt. It's so cracked. The bottom of the timing cover was missing. There was a crack underneath it. It was behind the flywheel. You couldn't see it. I'm thinking it's the same belt when the car was new.
Okay.
And what you've always said, get those parts from the repair shop. I never did. Now, if I would have got the parts back, I would have been more satisfied that repair got done.
Yeah, yeah. And guys, people will say to me, Mark, that they'll give you any kind of belt. And that's true. It could be. But if you went to the auto parts store and you said, what size is the belt, the timing belt here? And he goes, it's 52 and a half inches. And then he, and you go, will you measure this on your belt scale? And he goes, yeah, it's 6 inches longer. Then that creates a problem for the shop.
Yeah, well, I think, like you always say, get those parts back and pay with a credit card.
Yeah.
Because I stopped after that. I stopped going to that shop. I don't want to mention the name.
Don't,
but,
please.
But I'm thinking all the other things that, yeah, they say they do, but obviously this looked like it wasn't done, obviously. But
it's
anyway,
planned.
The other equipment. What's that?
They do this when they can and when they want to and when business is slow. The bad guys, really, yeah. It's not more than 1 or 2% of all the people out there. The rest of us play by the rules. But there are some shops
right.
out there. They're going to bill you like that BMW thing. They're going to bill you a whole lot of money and clean the drain out. And they accomplish the same goal other than they took advantage of you in a bad way. But anyway, you had a second question.
Yeah, I have a question for Nate. Nate, I have a 99.73. I wanted to get your opinion on what would be the best chip for it. It has a Banks chips in it now, but I want to upgrade it. What do you think would be the best chip for it?
The Banks one definitely has to go away.
Hold on a minute. he was talking to his daughter at that particular point. What he meant to say was sometimes I would rather get your list first. That's what he should.
Well, the list on it too, a 6-inch lift on it already.
No, I mean the list of programmers you think you might want to look at.
I just started looking into it now. I'm not sure.
Okay, go ahead and tell him what you would put on your 7.3.
Look up BP Tuner. D as in dog, P as in Paul. DP Tuner. That's going to be the one you want
DP,
for the truck.
Yeah, I've heard
of
that.
Yeah.
I've heard of that. Is it pretty programmable?
Well, you're going to ask for whatever horsepower torque numbers you want, and then they're going to program the chip accordingly. So you could have several different files or several different tunes for that on a switch that you can turn up or down depending on where you want it.
Tell him where to go at the beginning without being greedy. Where is he going to end up? Yeah. What, where's it, what program is he going to end up? What horsepower is he going to end up with that's going to make him happy?
Well, it could be 40 horse. It could be there's 100 horse tune for those. So,
I know, but there's got to be an average where people just, this is too radical and this, I don't notice the difference. And
yeah, usually he's going to end up in a 60 to 80.
Okay. All right.
Daily driver tune.
One way or the other. One way or the other. Okay.
You can go to our website and look at those or look up DP Tuner and go directly to him. He's on the East Coast. So.
So he just picks a horsepower, but it does duration. It does boost. It does timing. It does injector pulse rate. It's just by the horsepower.
Yep.
That's a plug and play in the right way.
Yes.
Is this something you guys do, Nate, over at your place? Because I'm up north here in Phoenix.
We do, yes.
Okay.
And I have a coupon for you. I have a coupon for you for $100 off. So Mark at MarkSalem.com, and we already know Mike has a Kia, and I want you to send a copy of the registration of that 19. What year did he say it was?
I don't remember.
What year was the Kia? 99. Yeah, send the registration.
06.
Oh, 06. That's what I thought it was. It wasn't a 99.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fun enough. Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. We have five lines. You're welcome to call us. 602-508-0960. And I'm all out of coupons. You know, I don't have any more, but I do have some pictures of Nate with a woman other than his wife. And so if you want to buy those, then give me a call.
You're crazy.
I know. Next to me, and I'll turn on the speakers in the studio. And Nate,
yes,
I want to make it clear that the naked pictures comment wasn't true. It was just an effort as stupid humor. And I, in my defense, I've hit my head more than once. And every once in a while, the electricity, the lightning strikes start. And so I just want to make sure that Mike doesn't really think, or anybody else in the world really thinks, that I have pictures of you with a woman other than your wife. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I need a yes out of you, okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
Absolutely.
David, good morning to you. How you doing?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I have a 76 Chevy Malibu.
Okay.
And I took the steering column out of it, and I had some rebuilding done on it. I got it back, and I reinstalled it, and put the steering wheel back on, and on that, it has a center horn pad that you have to, there's two screws on the left and right-hand side, and you screw them in to hold the horn pad down. Now, all of a sudden, when I connect the wire to the back of the clip and I tighten these screws up, the horn goes on, and it won't go off. It's just like it's stuck on. So if I unloosen those screws, then the horn will shut off.
Okay. It's not uncommon in some of the older cars, and yours is 76. 45 years old, is my math right? 25 and 20. It's not uncommon for them to be damaged by the heat and be warped. It's not uncommon for Ford horns to go off in the middle of the night, and the horn pad needs to be replaced. And the next question out of your mouth is why wasn't it there before? And I can't answer that. So I don't know how you do this. Can you possibly drive with the screws at that critical area where the horn is not blowing, but yet it will when you ask it to?
It depends how far I've got the screws snugged in.
Okay.
But I've had this pad off before and put it back on with no problems, and now all of a sudden now I'm getting this problem.
Well, I don't think it's related to the steering column overhaul. It's an ancillary thing that you took off before you had the steering column rebuilt. And so, you know, it's one of those things where that the problem you have right now, I've been wrong before, but I think the odds are 1 in 999 that this is going to be related to the steering column, especially since you say I can make this problem come and go by tightening up the two screws at the back of the steering wheel. So I honestly don't know. I think maybe I would probably go by, find out who has a 76 Malibu horn pad. I wouldn't care of the color. And just go buy one for $15 at a wrecking yard and see if the problem's still there in exactly the same fashion you have now. Mm-hmm. That might change my mind. But if that one works and it's blue and you had a black one, or if, you know, whatever, you have a tan one and it's blue, then you got a tough thing. You can go buy some vinyl spray and change the, but taking it apart, I don't think is an option, because I don't think you're going to take it apart and fix it. I think you're going to mess it up. Nate?
Okay.
My two cents is there maybe a shim or a isolator of some kind that may be missing? Just, I know how it is when you look at something over and over again, you miss it, you know.
Yeah.
Do it daily.
And you bring up a good point, because I was thinking the same thing. I wonder if we put a washer between the steering wheel spoke, and then on this side, on the left side, we got the screw, and on the right side, we got the pad.
Yeah.
But he's still pulling on the threaded part of the pad.
Right.
And it doesn't make any difference where we put that washer, on the back side near the screw head or on the front side. It really makes no difference. When he pulls it, somehow it's distorting and causing the horn to blow.
Yeah. It is a contact thing, so is it warped? Is it, you know, something?
Yeah. It just, I don't know the answer to it, and I got to tell you, that's the first time anybody's ever said that to me on radio since 1988. Now, does your wife love you, and have you been recently divorced? And she's an auto mechanic. I guess the answer is
no.
No, okay. I'm just teasing you. So, I don't know. If what happens if you found another pad in the 76 Malibu that happened to be the same color? I mean, if it was $10 or $15, why not just go look at it? Another place you can look at is Dorman, D-O-R-M-A-N. D-O-R-M-A-N. And Dorman makes lots of aftermarket parts. You can also find something of a new variety, and then have some paint and body shop dye the cover to the color you want. So you take the new pad in and the old pad, and you say, make them look the same. So there's lots of people that can pull that off. Anyway, that's a question I haven't come, but I don't think, and here's the deal. I know that you had a steering column rebuilt, and the possibility exists that they caused this problem. We'll know whose fault it is once we fix it. So once we fix it, we'll know. You're laughing, but that's true.
Yeah.
You won't know until you fix it. So we can talk about all the ancillary stuff, but the fact of the matter is once we fix it, we'll know who made the problem. All right, we'll be back right after this.
Glenwood, it being that again?
Yeah. Yeah. And just tell them you want a semi-synthetic or blended oil. That's all you tell them.
And what did you say again for the miles on that?
That's good. A semi-synthetic, you're going to go 7,000, 7,500 miles. Which is, and you said 15. So 15 a year, so you're going to get a change. Now, beginning of summer, beginning of winter is how I would do your two oil changes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Elise, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, Nate, when it comes to diesels, what's your favorite again?
7.3.
Okay. Yeah. What's your second favorite?
Probably the Dodge.
All right. Build the best vehicle, the best truck, using parts from all three.
Parts from all three?
Yeah. I'll do first.
Go first. Yeah.
Okay. I would have the 6.7 Dodge. I'd have the Allison transmission. They all have Dana running gear. And so that would be the two that I would pick out. I think the air conditioning systems are all the same. Creature comforts have to depend on trim. I like the Longhorn and the Dodge, and I like the King's Ranch interior on the Ford.
That's so much is what I tell people anymore, is what interior comforts do you like? Because everything else around the powertrain seems to be so good anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with you.
Yeah. So what would I build? That's a tough question, because there's so many builds I would do.
What motor of the three out there?
Which one? 6.7 Dodge, probably.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I would go with Dodge's heavy-duty trans. I like that when I had it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And both of them, both the Allison, which takes motorhomes for 40, 45 feet, big trucks, all that kind of stuff, but they have 1,000, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, so they have an Allison for all those different weight levels.
Right.
So we're pretty much the close the same. The running gear is the same. The front and rear differentials, that most all of it's Dana stuff. So other than creature comforts, there's nothing in the air conditioning or power steering or nothing like that. Nothing that's going to be substantially different.
What seat do you fit in best? What interior do you like the most? And all of them are so close on horsepower and torque anymore.
I was with you until you said that.
What's that?
What seat do you fit in best and all that kind of stuff. And here's why. You're not going to make that choice. She is. Okay?
No, I do.
If it's going to be your truck.
Yeah.
But I'm cognizant of Renee. I mean, I need to. She, you know who's got my truck right now? She does. And you know what she's doing? Hitting garage sales all over Tempe.
Yeah.
And so, I bought a short bed figuring that I could minimize the amount of stuff she buys. I'm not that lucky.
I can't own a truck with a sunroof.
Why?
Because it hits my head.
Oh, because of the 2 or 3 inches.
Yeah, it's too short at that point. The interior is too short.
What, so. you can't slide your butt a little bit forward?
The seats don't go low enough.
You know? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, do you want the sons to give you a call? they can use you somewhere.
Have someone, huh? Yeah.
No kidding. Well, anyway, folks, Nate and I have been friends for a long time. Our shop goes to Nate when we have a diesel problem, and he's always nice enough to help us. It's not likely that he's going to spend a whole bunch of time with people on the phone, trying to answer car questions and stuff like that. But as for all of us, we would like to see, hear, and drive the car.
Yep.
So if you have a problem, you are best served to do that. So you have two issues. You have the customer that's never been in before, and then you've got the regular customer that's been in and you recognize. So there's a difference in how you're treated just because of our relationship. So the customer that's been in a long time probably is going to get a quick test drive and a quick analysis. The other customer, you're going to have a better chance of getting our attention if you just avoid Monday mornings and Friday afternoons.
Sure.
And those are the two the busiest times for us, and that's probably not going to happen. But it's no different than anywhere else. When you go into the restaurant, if they know you really well, you're going to get a good table and you're going to get a good service.
Yep.
If you come in and they've never seen you before, things may be slightly different. I'm not saying that you're going to be treated terrible and your food's going to be terrible. It's just things are slightly different, and it's just that relationship stuff.
Yep.
All right, Nate is Strictly Diesel, and he's at Scottsdale Road in McDowell.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I like the whoa, 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 though.
Yeah, whoa, whoa, whoa.
I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road on the east side. Nate at Strictly Diesel, and you're welcome to call him. And if you have a question, then try to avoid the busy times. But and if you have a diesel and you live in that area, in the geographical area within a 10-20-mile radius, then I would suggest that you go to him for your oil changes and take some advice as they find issues that you need to address. And there's two kinds of issues, ones that we need to do now and ones you need to plan for. And the plan for ones is here's the symptoms to look for to let you know that this is something you need to deal with. Mark at MarkSalem.com, Mark at MarkSalem.com.